holding on Copaim at bays, about five lines from the end of the narrowest lines, that is, line against last night. We're in the middle of talking about the topic of Shechad, that a dayan is not allowed to take a bribe or anything that resembles it. So in that connection, Amar Papa, Loi Lidun Inish Din Lamanda Rochim, a person should not judge a Din Torah for somebody who loves him. Veloi Lamanda Sani Leyan, or who he loves. Veloi Lamanda Sani Leyan, not for somebody who he hates. Which Tosus points out, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about the idea, as far as Eidos, that if you have a really, really close friend, like a Shushrino, like somebody who helped with your wedding, like one of your best men, or a Soine, somebody who you're so angry at him that you haven't spoken to him for 3 days, then you're not even allowed to be an aid to such a person in Beis Din, because there's too much of a chance that you're going to lie in his favor or against him, as the case may be. Here, Tosfos says, we're not necessarily talking to that extent. Just, you know, you like the guy or you don't like the guy. Nevertheless, you shouldn't be judging on him. Which also Tosfos says, not necessarily would that be lahalocha. You're not allowed to judge such a person. It's a good advice, midas chasidus, that you shouldn't. The Rambam actually holds an actual iser that if a dayan hates somebody who loves him, he shouldn't judge him. From Tosfos, according to Tosfos, it's just a chumra. Anyway. The idea is somebody who he loves, he's not going to see anything against him. And if he hates him, he's not going to see anything in his defense. In that connection, speaking of a dayan that people love him or hate him, when you have a young Talmud Chacham that the people of the city love him, it's not necessarily because he's such a great guy, but it's because he's not giving the mussar in mili d'shmaya, in avodas Hashem. And we learned, I think it was back in Shabbos, they said over there that everybody in Pumbedisa hated Rabba. And so Abaye asked, because he used to always give them mussar. And so Abaye asked him, so what's going to happen after 120 when you pass away? Who's going to give the hetzer for you? Who's going to cry on your behalf? He says that as long as I have you and Rabba Bar Chanan, two of his great talmidim, that's good enough for me, even if everybody else hates me. I used to think that all the people of Mechuzah loved me. Rabba grew up in Mechuzah. He lived his whole life there, and when he got older, he was the Rabba and the Rosh Hashiva there. So first, I thought everybody likes me. Then when I became a dayan, aminu minay yisanuli minay rachmuli. Then I thought, well, some of them hate me they're the ones that I decide against, and some of them love me, the ones that I decide in their favor. But then I thought, you know, things always change. One day Pliny wins his case, the next day the same Pliny is in a din Torah against somebody else, and he loses. Then I figured, you know what, if they love me for judging in their favor, then everybody loves me at one time or another. If they hate me, everybody hates me. There's no particular group in the town that likes me and particular group that hates me. Vipashna, that's what he's saying. In other words, therefore, there's no particular issue with judging any of them. It's not an absolute thing that these guys love me and these guys hate me, and therefore there should be the issue that a papa said before. No, it's a situational matter. Right now, I judged against him today, so he hates me. Tomorrow he'll love me again.
That's just
the dinim amen. That's the return. They didn't do dinim in those days.
What do you mean?
They first of all, you don't do dinim nefashis outside of Israel unless. They're all the worse though. They can't. They can't be somebody who they love or hate, etc. Well, I mean, certainly, if you judged against somebody and sentenced him to death, he didn't like you or hate you afterwards. He's dead. The Mishnah Sanhedrin actually mentions that after a person was executed by Beis Din, the expectation was that the family comes and it's Shoyal B'Shalom, and they go and greet the Dayanim and say to them, well, the idea is, in order to demonstrate that they don't hold it against them, that they had their relative executed, we know you didn't do it because of personal reasons, you did it because that's the din.
Yeah.
Okay. Turn it up on them. where the pasuk says v'shochad lo sikach, that you shouldn't take a bribe, ain't it tzarech lomer shochad mammon? No, needless to say, that's talking about shochad of money. Ela afilo shochad dvarim nami yaser. It even applies to shochad of things. Dvarim can mean words or things. From the various cases that we're going to have in the Gemara over here are all things. Things that a certain person did for the diet. At the Sman, Shulchan Aruch actually points out it does include words as well. It does include, for example, the same way as in Hilchos Ribis, that if you have, if you lent somebody money and up until now he didn't regularly greet you in shul or on the street or whatever, he's not allowed to start now because that's the Ribis Dvarim. Same idea over here. If you have a person who up until now has not regularly been greeting the Dayan and now all of a sudden he goes out of his way to do so, then that would be Shulchan Dvarim also.
Because it's
in a case. Because eventually it's going to, yeah, because we're talking about that he's going to be coming to a case in front of that guy, and yeah. Incidentally, by the way, the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch begin the siman on these halachas of Shochad with the word ma'od ma'od. You have to be very, very careful to stay away from Shochad. And the Bach on Torah and the Sman on Shulchan Aruch both point out that the reason is there's such a taiva for that, as well as for a couple of other things, for ribbis, for arayas, and whatever, that all those things, you have it's mentioned ma'od ma'od. You have to be extra, extra careful. Why? How do we know maybe attacker only means shochad of money? Midlaik said betza, because the pasuk could have said betza. Like the expression that Yehuda uses with his brothers. Ma betza, what profit are we going to have? Kinara gathachinu. Betza would mean money. And she emes sone betza. Shochad has a more broader meaning. So, hechidam is shochad dvarim. What's this kind of shochad of things? Kiha de Shmuel have a b'mabra. For example, one time Shmuel was crossing a river on a ferry. And somebody came and held out his hand to help him on or off the boat. So Shmuel asked Shalom Aleichem, where are you from? What do you do? Dina Isle. I have a din Torah here in town. So Shmuel says, I'm passing you for the din Torah. You did me a favor by helping me. That's Shoichad Devarim. In the end, Yaakov, I forgot that because Tuesday night of the Segel has his cheer downstairs, so that's why we're here. All right. Another example. A Mema have a Yosef, a Kodoyin Dina. A Mema one time was sitting and judging a Din Torah. Parach Gadfa Areshe, and a feather flew onto his head. Also, Ahu Gavra Shakle, so somebody comes over and takes it off. Omle Maya Vituch. A Mema asked him, what brings you here? Omle Dina Isli, he says, I have a Din Torah. Omle Pastum Alakul Dina, same thing he tells him, I'm passing you for the Din Torah because it's Sheikha Dvarim. And a third case, Ma'ukma have a Shodrid Ruka Kameh. One time there was spit on the ground, there was saliva on the ground in front of Ma'ukma, which looks disgusting. Also, Ahu Gavra Kasye, somebody went and covered it in order that Ma'ukma shouldn't be disgusted by it. Omle Maya Vituch. Amalei Dina Isli, Amalei Pasul Malachav Dina, same thing, he says, I'm tackling you, I can't be your Dayan. The Pasha is the reason why the Gemara mentions these examples in this order is because you're going like from Minakavid Alakal, kind of. You have the first guy actually helped him with by giving him his arm to support him. The second one just took a feather off his head, a lesser thing. And the third one, it wasn't even something on Ma'ukra itself, it's just saliva that was on the ground. Not impossible. It's just a Dayan. Dayan. No. So it's one thing. We're not talking about if somebody did you a favor last week and then this week. If he's inviting you, he's the one doing you a favor. It's the other way around. We're talking about where you're doing the rob a favor.
Okay, but it's been one both ways.
So if you're doing the Rav a favor and you know that immediately after that there's going to be a Din Torah, or the Rav knows. No, so that's what I'm saying. So we're not talking about 3 years down the road. That's the thing. If 3 years later the guy showed up and then there's going to be a Din Torah, then Amema or Shmuel or whatever wouldn't have had a problem with it. It's when it's right then and there, when it's still fresh in everybody's mind, yeah. Having said that, though, I mean, we do find back in the old days, it used to be very common that the people of a town would pick a rav not from that town, who didn't grow up in that town. Well, there were always exceptions. Sometimes the person ended up being a rav in his hometown like a rav before. But one reason for that may well have been because otherwise he's going to be very friendly with people in the city. Yeah. Okay. And another example, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi have a rogel arise, they have a mice, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi have a rogel arise, his oris, who took care of his orchards and fields and whatever, used to have the practice to have a maaser. He used to bring him komale Shabbos to every Erev Shabbos, kanta to pay me a basket full of fruit from the orchard. Yom echad aiser lebehavah Shabbos. So one week he brought it to him on Thursday instead. Amalei maishnah ha'idna. So Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi asked him what's different. Amalei dina isli. So he says I have a din Torah. The both the dinim usually sit Monday and Thursday. But Amina, agapuchi aiser lelemar. So I figured I'm here in town anyway for the din Torah. I may as well save myself an extra trip and bring you the food a day early. Loi kabel minei. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi did not want to accept it from him because there still might be an issue of shoychad. And Amalei pasul melach l'dina, he says, I'm passing you to be judged by me. However, Oisiv Zuzah did Rabbanan, so Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi arranged for a pair of Tzemach HaChamim to sit as a din Torah k'dayanim lay, and they were judging him. So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi recused himself. Ah, so that's the thing. Did he recuse himself? I mean, usually a Beis Din has to be three, not two. So what's he putting? What's he setting up a pair of Tzemach HaChamim?
Three.
So it should be three. So Marshall first mentions the idea that maybe we're talking about Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi didn't recuse himself completely. Maybe he just meant, I won't judge you alone, but I'm willing to judge you with two other dayanim. But then he says, no, that's not what it means. It means that he figured, look, I'm curious what's going to happen. If you have a regular base din of three, if you have a regular panel of three, what's going to happen? The din Torah, let's say, might end up going against this guy, fine, but one of the three dayanim may have felt in favor of him, and therefore wanted, and it would be useful to know, basically, you know, here like this, I was about to be given shoychad, and as we'll see in the continuation of the story, he actually started thinking in his favor. So now, basically, how is it going to come out? Is there taka a reasonable possibility that he might have won his case? So if he sets up a base in the three, there's not going to be any way to know. You don't know afterwards who decided what. The psak din is given in the name of the whole base din. Like this, he set up a base din of two, which technically the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin. You're not supposed to have a base din of two, but it is dineim din. It's called base din chosuf, but the din Torah is a din Torah. If it turns out that that way we'll know. If they deadlock, if one says he's chayev and one says he's potter, well then we'll know. There could have been a chance he could have won it. If both of them say he's chayev, then we know that then we know that's that, yeah. Okay. Bahadur de Ka'azullah, see meanwhile as Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi was going back and forth wherever he was going the rest of that day, Omar, he was thinking to himself, you know, he boy toin hachi. You know, if he wants, he could think of such and such a claim. If he would think of it, it would help his case a great deal. Then he caught himself. Omar, he said to himself, Tipach nafsham shamakabla shaychad. People who accept shaychad, their neshama should be blown out of them. Tipach nafsham is an expression. It really means more like they should suffer the ultimate disappointment. Like, Oman, Nishal, and Natalti. Think of it. I didn't even end up taking this basket of food. Being Natalti, and even if I had taken it, Shalvi Natalti, it was my own L'chatchila anyway. And yet I see that it's having such an effect on me that subconsciously, and consciously even, I'm thinking of arguments. And that was subconsciously, but yeah. Makabla Sheikhad, people who actually accept Sheikhad, Allah's Kama Vakama, how much more so, inevitably they're going to be in favor of the guy who gave them Sheikhad. And now we see what a terrible thing it is. By the way, there's a number of places in Chassidus where this story is brought to illustrate an idea. You know, we talk about in Chassidus, there's two types of rotzen. There's rotzen, which is higher than seichel, which we call keser. So like a person has a rotzen, a person has an undefinable rotzen for something, and therefore that moves their seichel to think of reasons, how and why and whatever to get it. And then you have the other way around, where a person thinks of something in seichel, I know that such and such is good for me, and therefore I develop a rotzen, for it. This is an illustration of the rotzen that's higher than seichel. Because of the sheichad, therefore his rotzen is now moving his seichel around and making him think of arguments in the guy's favor. Another example, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Elisha, Aisila Yahu Gaber Reish Sagez, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Elisha was a Kohen. Somebody once brought him Reishis Hagel, the first shearing. It says in Parshas Shoftim, the pasuk that says that's one of the Matanis Kohuna, that the first wool that you shear from your sheep every year you give to a kohen. Midaraisa, there's no shear for it. Midrabanan, it's supposed to be 1/60th of the total shearing, of the total amount of wool. Amalei Mehechaat, Rabbi Shmuel asked him, where are you from? Amalei Meduch Plan, I come from such and such a place. Far away, I have a kohen l'meisalei. What for? You couldn't find a kohen between your hometown and here to give this reish to. Amalei, so he says, Dina Isli, it's because I have a Din Torah. Vamina, and I figured, I'm coming to you for the Din Torah. Aga Baruchoi, while I'm coming anyway, Isli Lahacha, I may as well bring the Reishis Agez over here also. Again, Isli Lamar, I'll bring it to the Rebbe. Again, Amalei Pasil Nalacha Dina, Loi Kabamine, he says, I'm passing you for the Din Torah, and I'm not taking the Reishis Agez from you.
Why is he passing him? Shouldn't the person be passing the Rabbi?
Well, that's what it means. In other words, I'm passing, I'm not going to judge you Din Torah. Recusing. Somebody makes a point, by the way, that in the previous case with Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, the expression was the other way around. He didn't accept it from him, and he said Pasil Malach Ladina. Here it's the other way around. First he says Pasil Malach Ladina, and second, I'm not accepting it from you. The difference is because in the first case, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi felt that it's more a matter of Sheikhad, and therefore the first thing is I can't accept it. Whereas over here, maybe it's not a matter of sheikha, that is matnas kohen after all. You do have to give it to a kohen. But so therefore, the first thing is, I have to recuse myself. Next, I'm not taking it, and in any case, there's plenty of other kohenim you could be giving it to anyway. You don't have to give it to me.
Once you give it back,
it doesn't matter. So, Oitzibloi Zugadirabon, and again, he set up a pair of Kamer Chachamim to judge the case instead. I don't know if there's an actual difference in meaning. It might just be Tosa Tfus or Tosa Sofa or something. I don't know. Anyway, he set up a pair of Tamar Chachamim, because Dainilei, and they're judging the case. Again, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Elisha, the same thing happened to him as Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi. Bahadi de Ka'azov Ossi, as he's going back and forth on his various errands. Omar, he starts thinking to himself, he boy toin hachi, such and such would be good arguments he could be using. And then he catches himself, Omar, he thinks to himself, tipach napshom from a kabbalah sheikhad, people who actually take sheikhad deserve the ultimate disappointment. Omar nishle natalti, madach, I didn't take anything, viv natalti, shali natalti, and even if I took, I'm entitled to it, because I am a kohen. Kach, and nevertheless, it's having such an effect on me. Makabbalah sheikhad, alachos kamo kamo. Another case, Rav Onan Aisile Ahu Gavra Kanta de Gildani de Begili. So a person once brought to Rav Onan a basket full of little fish that grow among the reeds. Gildani is a type of fish. De Begili means that they grow among the reeds in the river. Amalei Maya Vidach. So again, Rav Onan asked him, what brings you here? Amalei Dina Isli. He says, I have a Din Torah. Loi Kabamine. And Rav Onan says, in that case, I'm not taking this present from you. Amalei Pasul Malach Lidin. I'm recusing myself from the case. Amalei, here there's a twist. The man tells him, Amalei, dina demar lei b'ina, you know what, fine, I don't need you to judge me. Kabul le kabul ma, but I still want you to accept this. Nas sheikhad, I want you to accept this. Lo limna anmar me'akru v'bikurim, please don't prevent me from being able to bring bikurim, to bring a present to our Talmud Chacham, as the Gemara is going to say, is like bringing bikurim. The Tanya, as we learn in the Brai, so when the Pasuk says, in connection with Elisha, at the beginning of the Haftorah of Tazria, the Ishma mi Baal Shalusha, a man came from Baal Shalusha, it's a place in Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that the grain and whatnot would ripen there earlier than any place else. Vayavil Isha Elikim Lechem Bikurim, he brought to the Isha Elikim bread of Bikurim, Esrim Lechem Sodim, 20 loaves of barley bread, the caramel of Tikloinoi, and fresh grain, the caramel is fresh toasted grain, but sikloinoi, different mepharshim talk about that. It means in a covering. So either it means like in a bag or in a cloak, or it means still in their shells. Whatever it is, and he gave that to Elisha.
Caramel is grain.
Fresh grain.
Roasted?
No, I'm sorry about that. Kali is when it's roasted. Caramel is when it's fresh. So the question is, what are you calling it? Lechem bikurim. Elisha ichal bikurim hava. Does Elisha eat bikurim? What's the problem with that? Rashi says that we learn that Elisha's father's name was Shaphat. The Gemara in Pesachim explains that this Shaphat is the same one who's mentioned among the leaders of Shevet Gad in Divrei Hayamim. So Elisha is from Shevet Gad. He's not a Kohen. Only a Kohen eats bikurim. Tosfos says there's a different issue. Elisha lived in Shomroi, the capital of the Ten Shvatim. Bikurim only eaten in Yerushalayim. So whatever the case, so what are you calling it bikurim? Ella Loimalach, so teaches you, call maybe dirt in the Talmud Chacham, anybody who brings a present to a Talmud Chacham, kila makar bikurim, it's like he's bringing bikurim. So therefore, he says to Rabbanan, at least, you passed me for the Din Torah, fine, but at least let me have the chance to bring bikurim. Yeah. Amalei sort of on and tells him, you know what, you got a point. Up until now, you know, I didn't want to accept it because I figured it's a matter of sheichad. But now that you told me a logical reason, then fine, I'm willing to receive it. I'm willing to accept it.
And
refuse myself. Incidentally, by the way, there's a couple of places where the Rebbe addresses the issue. There's a letter to Ben Tzion Shem Tov, for example, who was in charge, where he lived, which I think was England, of collecting maimed. There was always a custom of chassidim throughout the generations to collect money from maimed for the upkeep of the household of the Rebbe. And the Rebbeim would be able to use that money for their household expenses and for tzedakah and for whatever else they felt was necessary. So apparently somebody had asked Ben Tzion Shem Tov, the letter in Igros Kodesh, that what happened to, isn't a Talmud Chacham supposed to be Soyna Matonas Yechia? And the Rebbe answered him from our Gemara over here, that basically there's a difference between you giving a person a present means like you're the giver, he's the recipient, like he's lower than you. Here it's the other way around. You bring Doyroin, the expression the Gemara uses over here is Doyroin. You bring it as like a the kind of gift that you offer a superior. Not to show like you're doing him a favor, but on the contrary, to show your honor for him. Like you want to have the honor of participating in what he's accomplishing. That's a valid thing. That's Victorian. Yes, the Rebbeim always accepted Maimon, but apparently somebody had objected to Ben Tzion Shem Tov, that's how you talk, and what are the Rebbeim going and soliciting and soliciting gifts for? And the answer is there's a gift versus there's a dodo in where like something that you give like something that you give a superior, like a present like you bring when you come into a king or something. That's the difference. That's Bikurim. That's what we're talking about over here. Also true, right? Yeah.
What?
That's true. There's a halacha in Gemara Kedushin. You have a case there. What is it? Where a woman gives a man, a chosh of a man, a gift, and it's considered Kedushin. Why? Even though normally it's supposed to be the husband, it's supposed to be the man gives the woman the pruta. But here, because she has the hana that an important person like him was willing to accept her gift. That hanah. And then therefore that counts as kedushin, yeah.
Even if he didn't say anything?
Well, he has to say out of kedushin, but yeah.
Did he say that?
Or? Yeah, we're talking about he said it, but yeah. That. There was a sicha once, Shavuos, where the Rebbe also addressed this issue. Somebody had brought as a present to the Rebbe a bottle of wine, and the Rebbe connected that with this, and also another Gemara in Yuma that talks about offering wine to them and a chachamim. One point that Rebbe made over there, you know, we learned at the top of the Amud that a dayan who goes around who collects presents from people like truma is not a good thing. But here we're saying that Talmud Chacham can accept bikurim. The difference is truma you're giving to the kohen, sort of, you know, you have to give it to him, kind of. He's coming around and asking for it, so you have to give it to him. Bikurim is the other way around. You make a whole simcha of you're bringing it to the Beis Hamikdash and giving it to the kohen, even though the kohen himself, actually, you're giving it to may not even be somebody on your level, etc., but you make a whole simcha out of it because it shows the essential connection that you have with the Eibishter. And therefore, that ever connected that with Shavuos, which is the Zman Matan Torah Seinu, when we celebrate the essential connection that we have with Eibishter. That's why Shavuos is Chag HaBikurim. Anyway. Okay. So fine. I'll accept the present. Well, I can't judge your Din Torah. Shadri L'Kameh de Rav Nachman. So Rav Onan sent the guy off to Rav Nachman. Shalach Lei, and he sends along a message with him. Nidaini Ma'ar L'Hai Gavra. Please judge this person. Da'ana Onan Posil Nilei L'Dinah. Because I, Onan, am possible to judge the Din Torah. Well, he didn't specify why he's possible. Omar, said Rav Nachman, thought to himself, Mida Shalach Li Hachi, since Rav Nachman sent me this message, Shmamina Krivehu, must be this guy as his relative. Why is he possible to judge him? Mistama, because they're relatives. Well, have a koyim dinah diyas mekameh. Well, Rav Nachman already had on his agenda for that day, he had a din Torah involving Yisoymim, which usually should come first. And he thinks to himself, you know what, high essa of a high essa. You have on the one hand, there's an essa to judge fairly, and especially to treat the yosim fairly. On the other hand, you have an essa of kovod of Tamid Chachamim, which extends also to honoring his relatives like this. Essa to kovod Torah, adif. So the essa of honoring the Torah is more important. Therefore, I should put this guy ahead of the yosimim. Salkid the dinner the yasmi. So he set aside the dinner the yosimim, but after the dinner, and he started this guy's din Torah. Well, that created a problem. Kibin Khaza Baldina Yakra de Kovidle, when this guy's Baldin, his opponent in the Din Torah, saw how Rav Nachman is honoring him by putting him even ahead of Yisoymim, and he knew that this guy is not a relative of Rav Onan. So Satan Tanase, his tainus was stopped up. Like he couldn't he fumbled his case in Beis Din because he thought that Rav Nachman is unjustly favoring this guy. And in fact, actually, the Rambam holds, so what happened is the next part after the two dots, but the Rambam, in fact, paskins that when you have a case involving a Yassim and a case involving a Talmud Chacham, you do have to do the Yassim's case first.
Because
the Yassim goes ahead, even if the Talmud Chacham, the mitzvah of helping the Yassim. So the question is, how does that fit with our Gemara? Some of Farshim say that's exactly it. Because the guy knew that really the Yassim's judgment should go ahead of this guy, and here Rav Nachman is putting him first, then that itself stopped him from being able to plead his case properly. Not Minishamayim, no. Just he felt like, you know, Rav Nachman is favoring my opponent, so that I don't have the freedom to speak as I'd want to and plead my case. Well, Rav Anan was to blame for this. If he had told Rav Nachman clearly why the guy is possible for a din Torah, then this wouldn't have happened. Therefore, what happened? Rav Anan had a regular liyo to Asagabe. Rav Anan used to regularly have a liyo on Navi visit him. To have a master like Seder de Elio, and Elio used to teach him Seder de Elio, which we call the Medrash, it's called Tana de Elio.
The Midrash?
It's a Medrash, yeah. Kivin de Ovid Hachi, after this happened, Istalak, then Elio went away. He didn't want to come visit Rav Anan anymore. Yosef Atani, so Bar Rachmi. So Rav Anan started fasting and davening for Rachmanus that Elio should return. But also, and Hitaka returned, but he also have a mavis lebeusi. When he came, he would appear in a very frightening way, and he would frighten Rav Anan. Marsha points out there were two factors over here. Number one, there was the fact that Rav Anan accepted the gift, even though, fine, the guy said bikurim and everything, for since he suspected originally it might have been shaykhet, he shouldn't have accepted it. And number two, the fact that he prevented, that he caused, that in the din turtle later in front of Rav Nachman, that this guy's opponent wasn't able to make his case properly. So therefore, two things happened corresponding to that. Number one, he had to fast. And number two, that, as the Gemara was going to say, he was scared, that we're saying he was scared of Eliyahu, and what happened for Ovid Tipusa, so he had to make a box and crawl inside the box and sit inside the box whenever Eliyahu came. Yep. V'yosef kameh, and he would sit in front of him, adaptically sit until he finished teaching him the whole Seder. So from then on, he had to sit inside a box when Eliyahu and Ovid was teaching him. So that's the thing. The sort of like he caused that this other guy was boxed in and couldn't effectively give his highness, so therefore he ended up having to be sitting in a box. Yeah. Behind Udamri, Seder Eliyahu Rabba, Seder Eliyahu Zutta. This is why the Seder Eliyahu is divided into you have a Rabba, a large part, and a Zutta, a small part. So what's the point? The large part is the part that he learned up until that time, when he's sitting out in a large, comfortable way. And the second part is when he's sitting cramped up in the box. Tosfos says differently. Tosfos says that also as a practical matter. Seder Elio Rabba, the Tanat Velio Rabba is much longer than Tanat Velio Zutta. So Rabba is bigger and Zutta is smaller. But the reason why it's divided into those two parts is it's the part that he learned outside the box and the part that he learned inside the box. Since we mentioned this story of Elisha with this guy who brought him the food before, so we might expand on that a little bit. B'shnei did Rabbi Yosef have a rischa. One time during the time of Rabbi Yosef, there was anger. There was an anger from the Eibishter. There was a famine.
Rischa
means anger. Rischa means anger. Yeah. Amri l'Rabban Yosef. So the Rabbanan say to Rabbi Yosef, "Liboy my rachmi." Please daven that the anger of the Eibishter should go away, and there should be rain. There should be food. Amr lahu, he says, I don't think we have the koyach. Hashta, consider. Uma Elisha, how much more, if you think of Elisha, the Chiyavu Rabbanan Mifturi Mikameh, when the Rabbanan, when the part-time students would leave the yeshiva, in Vati Medrash in those days, you had the full-time students, you know, the kolelniks, who, you know, they were living off trust funds, or just, like Rabbi Akiva earlier in the Sechta, they just, you know, they went away for 24 years or whatever it is, and then you had the ones who, you know, they'd come for the Achatala or whatever, they'd come when they're able to get off time from work, and then they'd go back. So when the part-timers left, and all that's left is the full-timers, have a paishit shein alfin u'mothin rabbanon, there were 2,200 rabbanon left as talmidim of his. And yet, so he had so many talmidim, and yet b'idan rizchala have a boy rachmi, and yet in a time of Hashem's anger, he didn't daven for rachmanus, for relief. In Elisha's times, there was a famine. This story that we had, this v'ishma b'abi b'al shalisha, there was a famine going on in Eretz Yisrael, and we don't find him davening for it. I have so much fewer Talmidim, as the Gemara is going to say soon. He had only 400 full-time Talmidim. You expect me to be able to daven? So what's going on? Well, I mean, don't we find the Chachamim daven for rain all the time? We had a whole Perek and Tainus with stories about that. So Marsha explains, the Vort is, there's two types of famine. In Pirkei Avos last week, we had Rav Shabbat Soiris and Rav Shokloya. Rav Shabbat Soiris is where there's shortages, food is more expensive than it would normally be. There's an inflation. So food is still available, it just costs more. So some people are going hungry, but not everybody is. As opposed to Rav Shokloya, when there's no food whatsoever, and everybody is starving. A Rav Shokloya, there's no question, you're diving for Rachmanus no matter what the situation. A Rav Shabbatsodas, you see that Elisha had 2,200 Talmidim who are suffering from the effects of that, because they're Talmidim, they're not working for a living, they're full-time Talmidim, and yet he didn't feel that it's appropriate to daven that the famine should end. How much more so when there's only 400? Other Mepharshim say, one of the Mepharshim named Yaakov says a little bit differently.
That was to interrupt Torah for that?
No, not necessarily to interrupt Torah. He just felt he didn't have the koyach, the daven, that his tefillah would be accepted. One of the Mepharshim named Yaakov says takes a different tack on it. He says that they're saying that there's no rain. The tzibur obviously doesn't have enough schos for rain. Then daven for parnasa, at least for the yechidim, for the Tamar Chachamim. And he answers them based on a Gemara and Tainus that parnasa is b'shvil rabim. That parnasa only comes for the schos of the rabim. You see that even Elisha, who had 2,200, even 2,200 can't be considered a rabbin. How much more so 400? Apparently not. It's still not the majority. It's still not the majority or anything, you know. Okay. So how do we know that Elisha had that many full-time Talmidim? The pasuk says, when the guy brought this food, Elisha's Mesharit said, how am I supposed to put this in front of 100 people? Now, what do you mean, my lifnei me'ish? What do you mean, in front of 100 people? Ilema dekulu lifnei me'ish. You're telling me the whole thing that the guy brought, the lechem bikurim, the 20 lechem sa'urim, and the caramel, the masharis, is arguing that I can't put it in front of 100? What's the problem? B'shnei batzoris tuvahavu. In a time of famine, that's plenty of food for 100 people. We learned in Tainus that the Gemara advises that during years of famine, a person should anyway be eating less than normal. So in a time of famine, that amount of stuff is enough to comfortably feed 100 people. What's the Masharis objection?
That's normal, 300
what?
That's normal.
Yeah. Ella, de kol chad v'chad kamimeya ish. No, what the Masharis meant is each of these things you're expecting me to put in front of 100 people. So what do we have? We have 22 things. There's lechem bikurim, is a loaf of bread bikurim. Number two, Esrim Lechem Sarim, 20 loaves of barley bread. And number three, Kamal Betzikhoina, a sack full of fresh grain. So each of those things, the Meshoras is asking, how is each of these things going to feed 100 people? And the Pasuk continues, Elisha tells them, don't worry, Ochel V'Hoyser, there'll be a nest, they'll have enough to eat and even leave over. And sure enough, that's what happened. What we see from that, so 22 items times 100 people each, is 2,200. Continuing on this topic of how many full-time Talmidim they had in various generations, when the Rabbanan would leave the yeshiva of Rav, and only the full-timers would be left, there would be 1,200 Talmidim left. When they would leave Rav Huna's yeshiva, there would be 800 left, full-timers. And the Gemara interject a second to tell us a little bit more about the size of Rav Huna's yeshiva. When he would give a shir, he would have 13 amiroyim. We've learned before that amorah's job was that a shiva would say his piece quietly and briefly, and the amorah would say it out loud and explain it to everybody. There was such a large crowd over there, he needed 13 amiroyim stationed in different places. In Babel, yeah. And when the Rabbanan would get up from the shiur, from the yeshiva of Rapuna, and they would shake out their clothes, a cloud of dust would rise up, and it would cover the sunlight. There was so much dust that it would dim the sunlight. For Amri, Rava, and in Eretz Yisrael, they would say, Eretz Yisrael is far away from Babel, but they would say, they just got up from the yeshiva of Rav Huna in Babel. So what is it? Could they see? So Shittim Kubetta says, according to Rashi, that yes, there was a nest that they could actually see. The Eretz made a nest that yes, in Eretz Yisrael they could see what's going on in Babel. Other Mepharshim say not necessarily. Literally, it could mean that, for example, that every time there was a, whenever there was a dust storm in Eretz Yisrael, they would say, you know, this kind of dust storm, this is what it must look like when Rav Huna what does Talmudim get at? Marsha says, Yoda points out what's with all the dust on their clothes, weren't they sitting in the Mismedrash? He says that no, there were so many people, they might not have been able to sit in the Mismedrash. They might have had to sit out in the street, so therefore their clothes would get very dusty. What Marsha says that the symbolism of it is that the clothes of the Talmud Chachamim represent their midas. It talks about Tanya, the Levushim of the Neshama, yeah. The dust on their clothes represents like the dust of their midas, like even the leftovers, so to speak, of their midas. The most minute effects of their midas tovus were so powerful that they would cover over the sun. The sun representing the power of the goyim. We know Yisrael Daimon Umon Lalavana, that the Jewish people are compared to the moon and we count by the moon. The goyim are compared to the sun and count by the sun. So the effect of their midas tovus was so much that it even blotted out the power of the goyim. No, so Bapashtos, what it would be is all the 13 Amoraim would gather around, he'd tell them his piece, and then they'd scatter around to different parts of the crowd and start explaining. Yeah. Further, as the generations went down, it got less and less. When the part-timers would leave the yeshiva of Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, there would only be 400 Rabbanon left. They called themselves the Yisoimim, like we're all that's left. In the previous generation, at 800, 1200 or whatever, now we're down to 400.
Why was it so little? I mean, so few
they were. So, first of all, Niskafnu Adodus, the generations get less and less. There were fewer and fewer people who were devoting themselves to studying full time. It may have also, times may have been harder, we don't know. When the Rabbanan would leave the yeshiva of Abaya, Vamilam Vera Papa, Vamilam Vera Bashi, three different generations, have a Paishim Mosan Rabbanan. All that were left were 200 Rabbanan. V'karun Apshayu Yasmi the Yasmi. And they called themselves the Yisoimim of the Yisoimim. If in the previous generation, the 400 were the Yisoimim, then we're just the Yisoimim of the Yisoimim.
Should we talk about that?
Yeah. Now, all of this was kind of a series of digressions based on, we had talked about the fact that the Gozrig Zeret from the beginning of our Perek had to be paid. We said they were paid out of Trumas Alishka, and that brought us into the whole subject of paying Rabbanim and Shochan. Now we're going to get back to that original topic of the Trumas Alishka and talk about other functionaries who were paid out of the money of the Trumas Alishka, and we'll go more generally into the operating expenses of the Mismikdash. A little bit of Shkolim.
Did you talk about the Yishkalim?
We did. So that was Shkolim as part of the Yerushalmi. This is the Babli. So this is one of the major places where the Babli talks about these topics. In fact, our Gemara over here is actually the next few lines that we have here of the Gemara are in the Yerushalmi Shkolim as well, and more or almost identical. The people who were in charge of checking mumim, of checking the animals for korbanos for mumim, and that was an important thing. You have to make sure that no baal mum gets brought to the korban. They would be paid out of the Trumas Alishka. They'd be paid out of the Machzor Shekel collection. Tosfos asked the question, how b'chlal, I mean, there's a halacha that you're not allowed to charge for looking at the mumim of a b'chur. If a person has a b'chur, we know in the times of the Mishnah, the b'chur would be brought to the korban if it's a tam, or it would be eaten by the korban if it's a bal mum. Nowadays, there's no korbanos, so you just do, if it's a tam, there's nothing you can do with it. If it's a bal mum, you give it to the korban and he shechts it and then can eat it. You might have a person who's checking the animal might have an incentive to declare it that it has a mum, and you'll pay him for it. Yeah, no, yeah. And therefore you're not allowed to pay him. So how are you paying them over here? So Tosfos gives so for this and the next couple of things, a couple of different answers. One answer that Tosfos mentioned previously at the beginning of the whole sugya is the reason why you said the Dayan Exeter, now we have these guys, a number of other people, how are they allowed to be paid for judging or for checking women or whatever? It was a salary, basically. They didn't have any other job. This is their full-time job. So therefore, they had to live off something. That's one answer. Yeah, so that's one answer. Second of all, Tosfos says there's a different. Yes, that's one answer is there's a salary. Second answer is one of the other Mepharshim gives is that we learn there in Bechoros that if the person who's checking for mumin is getting paid the same amount whether he finds that the animal has a tam or a bal mum, then it's no problem. Here it's the same thing. If they were getting a fixed salary, then it's no problem. Then Tosfos gives another answer, which is that that there's a difference with Bechor and anything else. The Bechor, there's more of a reason to think that the guy may declare it to have a mum when really it doesn't. Here, on the contrary, you want it to be brought to the carbon.
Yeah. So you can eat it.
Yeah, by the Bechor, yeah, because otherwise there's nothing you can do with it, yeah. So then we get this schar from Trumas Alishka. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, another din. Tamer Chachamim Hamalam Din Hilchus Shchit LaKayinim. There's a man Chachamim who would teach the Kayinim the halachas of how to shech. Technically, Yisrael can shech Chabonis, but in practice, the Kayinim would do it. Also, how you know from Chachamim Trumas Alishka. And here again, you have the same discussion. How are they allowed to take money for teaching Torah? And again, either you have the answer with a salary because they didn't have anything else to live off of. Or it was because it was a necessity. The Mishmikdash needed such people to teach. Well, so Tosfos says that Malusha is included in Shita. Yeah. Amr of Gidol Amr Rab. Tamar Chacham Hamlam Nemehil is Kmitza LaKoyanim. Also, the ones who would teach the Koyanim how to do Kmitza, where he scoop out the part of the Koyanim Mincha. Also, Noitzim's Koyanim Shemat Alushka. Same idea. The Mishmikdash needs such people. Amar Rav Baba Chana Amar Biechanan, Magiye Sfarim Shvirshalayim, the people who would correct the Sfarim, the Sfarim of Tanakh in Yerushalayim, also how you know the Sfarim of Shumas Alishka. Now, why with them? So Rashi gives the reason that really such a thing shouldn't be paid out to Shumas Alishka at all. It's a person's own responsibility to make sure their Sefer Torah is correct. But based in saw that people were getting lazy about it, so therefore, Beis Din has the power, as we're going to learn on Amud Beis Din, so Beis Din had the power to take some of the Trumas Alishka and earmark it for that. Yeah. Other Mepharshim talk about other, not give the people incentive, give that this way, yeah, this way the Sephardim are made sure to be kept correct. Some of the Mepharshim talk about some other possibilities, one of them being that you learn halachas. Towards the bottom. You learn halachas from the text of the psukim. If the wording in the Sefer Torah is wrong, then a kohen may learn the halachas incorrectly. Therefore, you have to correct them. So it's a necessity for the Beis Mikdash. And another explanation that's given in the Girsa and the Yerushalmi is not all the Sfarim and Yerushalayim, but rather the Sefer HaZorah, the particular Sefer Torah that they had in the Beis Mikdash that the Kohen Gadol would read from the Yom Kippur, the king would read from by Hakel. So that's a necessity for the Beis Mikdash. Omer of Nachman Omer Rav, Noshim Ogus B'Poroiches, also the women who would weave the Poroiches, the Poroichos plural, as we're going to learn soon, there were a bunch of them. Also, Noitlos Chorim and Trumas Alishka. They would also be paid out of the Trumas Alishka. So that's Rav Nachman had said that in the name of Rav. Rav Nachman himself says, Vani Omer, actually, I say that they have to be paid out of a different fund. Mikotche Bedek Abayis. They have to be paid out of Bedek Abayis.
Which is
sort of a lesser Kedusha, but the point is it's actually a different thing. Bedek Abayis, you know, to put it in terms of like a modern business. Bedek HaBayis is what they call the physical plant. You know, you have to have money to make sure that the building you need to buy or rent an office, you need to furnish it, etc. Furnishing is Trumas Alishka. We'll talk about that soon. But the actual physical plant itself, the what do you call it, the building, whatever, the machinery, that's all you need. You need a capital fund for that. That's Chodesh Bedek HaBayis. The payment for the paroches has to come out of that, for the people who make the paroches. Why? It's because the paroches are instead of a building. Namely, we're talking specifically, we learned in Yuma that in the second Beis Hamikdash, so we have like this, in the Mishkan of the paroches between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In the first Beis Hamikdash, instead they had a wall there, an amma thick. In the third Beis Hamikdash, she has to describe that there'll be a wall 2 amas thick. In the second Beis Hamikdash, it was supposed to be an amma thick, but they had a problem. The second Beis Hamikdash was taller than the first Beis Hamikdash. They couldn't build a wall that tall that would be an amma thick and not collapse. They couldn't build it thicker, because that would be taking away space from the Kodesh or the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They can't make it lower, because you can't, whatever. So therefore, the Gemara explains the Bava Basra. So therefore, instead, what they have to do is they have to replace it with 2 paroichas in. The other problem was they weren't sure that amma wall that was there in the first Beis Hamikdash, is that really supposed to belong to the Kodesh, or is it really supposed to belong to the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So they set up, we learned in Yuma, they set up 2 paroichas in, one was open on one side, one was open on the other side, the Kohen Gadol would walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim in a Z shape like that. So the parochas are there instead of what should have been there, a wall. If the repair of the walls comes out of kotcher betek abayis, then the parochas also has to come out of that fund rather than trumas alishka. Maybe the Gemara says have a contradiction. The Braisa says noshim ogus b'parochas, the women who weave the parochas, who base gamu amayis lachal aponim, and base gamu who are in charge of making the lachal aponim, who base abtinis amayis aktodus, and base abtinis that's in charge of making the aktodus, kulon how you know to schoim b'shumas halishka. They would all be paid out of the shumas halishka. So yes, the women who weave the parochas in would get out of shumas halishka. The answer is hasav b'debav. That Braisa is talking about the parochas that were on the gates. Right. So the answer is there's a difference between different kinds of parochasin. There's parochasin that were on the gate, and then there's parochasin between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kadoshim. The Amr of Zera Amr Rav, Shloisha also parochasai b'mikdash sheni. In the second mikdash, there were 13 parochasin. Shiva connected Shiva Sha'arim. There were 7 on the 7 gates. The Azara had 7 main gates. Each of them had doors, which were locked at night, closed or locked at night. During the daytime, the doors would be open. But still, they would have a parochas hanging over the gate. Rashi says for tzvius, you don't just want people peeking in and observing what's going on in the Bismuth. That's not covered yet. So they had 7 for those 7 gates. Echad the pitzcha shel heichel. Number 8 was on the entrance of the heichel. The echad the pitzcha shel ulam. Number 9 was on the entrance to the ulam. In front of the heichel, you had the ulam, the open area over there. Beis bedvir, and then you had 2 inside the heichel between the kodesh and the kodesh hakadoshim. Beis connect and baaliyah, and 2 corresponding to them in the attic and the second floor of the Bismikdash, there was a separation between the area above the Kodesh and the area above the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they had 2 parochasin separating it, same way. So the parochasin that are there in between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, 2 on the first floor, the 2 on the second floor, those are there instead of a wall. The people who weave, the women who weave those, had to be paid out of Bedek HaBayis, or not going to say. All the other 9, all the other nine are not there instead of binyan. They're there for privacy. Therefore, those come out of they're needed in order to provide some privacy when the avodah is being done. Therefore, it's part of shumas halishka. It's part of the operating expenses of the mishmetesh. Turn up on it. We learn in a brayta. Here is another group of people who would get paid out of shumas halishka. Noshim amagadlus b'neim lepara, the women who would raise their sons to eventually be the ones to fill up and be the kaddish water for the para aduma, how you know the schar of shumas halishka, they would also get their schar of shumas halishka. What was the situation? Rashi explains, we learned this in Sukkah, that the Chachamim wanted to make extra careful that the para aduma is as much as possible being done with an extra degree of tara. You wanted to make sure, therefore, that the people, the Kohen Gadol himself, has to be sprinkled with Parah Adumah water during the days before he's preparing to make a new Parah Adumah. You wanted that the people who are preparing that water and sprinkling him themselves have never become Tomei. Now, where do you find people who have never become Tomei? So we learned in Sukkah, they would have that special courtyards in Yerushalayim that were built on top of underground arches in such a way that if there was any Tumah underground that nobody ever knew about, it would get blocked by the arches. Women would volunteer that they'd have their babies there in these areas, in these compounds. The children would be raised there until they're 7-8 years old. Then, when they're 7-8 years old, they would take them down. They would take them down. The Gemara describes in Sukkah over there that have them ride on the back of oxen with doors on top of them, all to make sure that there's no possibility of underneath the ground. There were arches above the ground. It was a normal courtyard with houses in it. But these children would be raised there underneath these courtyards. So these children would be raised. There was no possibility ever that they ever became tamim. When the time came, they would bring them down to the shaloyach spring, and they'd fill up cups of water over there and put the ashes from a previous part adruma in there, and then use that to sprinkle on the kohen gadol. No, of course not. The people are not underground. Underground is the archways that are preventing tumor from coming up. The actual courtyard is a normal courtyard. The actual houses in the courtyard are normal houses. All it is they stayed inside this courtyard and inside this compound, inside these houses, until they were 7-8 years old. Yeah. So these women who were volunteering to have their sons raised like that, they would also get a salary from Tumah Salishka. Abishol says they didn't need to be paid out of Trumas Alishka. Noshim Yekoros, Shib Yerushalayim, the rich women of Yerushalayim, Ho Yezonis Oysen and Mepharnas Oysen, they would provide them food and clothes. So therefore they didn't need Trumas Alishka for it. Right of time now, so we'll continue tomorrow.